Welcome to the Intersection Hub podcast. I'm your host, Kimberly McKenzie, and I am so glad that you are here. Thank you for making this a priority in your day. Let's get right into it. Today we're in for a real treat. Today, Surabhi Jain is here to join us in conversation, and we are going to be talking about transparent and open hiring practices. Surabhi is the Executive Director of the Toronto Workforce Funders Collaborative. She is a leader in the social impact sector with nearly 20 years of experience in designing, implementing, and managing employment and skills development programs. She has worked closely with Fortune 500 companies to help them change racially biased hiring practices. At the same time, she is engaged in capacity building for the nonprofit sector and systems change. Surabhi's lived experiences have afforded her a unique perspective on transformative systems change. She brings experience from the workplace, from her travels, and from her childhood that have shaped her understanding of community, leadership, and human development. Surabhi has a Bachelor's of Science in Economics from Purdue University, Indiana, and a Master's of Arts in Sustainable International Development from Hellyer School of Social Policy and Management in Brandeis University, Massachusetts. If you were on LinkedIn a couple of months ago, you may have seen her job posting for a program manager. This job posting got a lot of attention because it was extremely transparent. The hiring process was outlined in detail, including a salary, of course, but even a section on what it was like to work with her, which I have to say made me want to work with her. So I think you are really going to enjoy this conversation. Thanks for being here. Surabhi, thank you for being here today. I am so glad that you agreed to join me in this conversation.
I'm very excited to be here, Kimberly. I have been asked about this job description so many times. I feel like this podcast is just appropriate to talk more about it.
Well, did it surprise you that it was such a refreshing job posting?
I think what surprised me was the reaction to it. Oh. And how many people reshared and the comments and the likes. I was not expecting that. That's not the intention with which I wrote the job description. Mm. I wrote the job description that I would have wanted mm-hmm. when I was younger or would want moving forward, you know, from the transparency perspective. Mm. I wrote it because I wanted to make sure that I was sharing everything about the job. I didn't want somebody coming in and saying, this was not in the job description, so I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be as transparent and open as possible and make the other person feel welcome or at least know what they were getting into.
Mm-hmm. I love that we're getting right into it because your job posting actually made it very clear that you are a very transparent and authentic person.
Yeah, to a fault sometimes.
Yeah. So we have in our sector right now, I think, a human resources crisis. It's hard to find people. It's hard to keep people. I think the workforce is demanding new systems and structures. And I think that your job posting was a great example of that. And for those people who haven't seen it, I just want to highlight a couple of small things. Like, and then I do want to read one section of it. But the you put right up at the top, you put the salary range right at the top, which we're starting to see more and more of. But under benefits, 3 weeks of sick time, like your organization does not expect people to use vacation days to take care of family members.
No, I wouldn't. Why would I? That's not vacation.
No,
that's
it's not
work. Yeah, I'm sorry. The vacation is meant to recharge you. Taking care of yourself or your family when you're sick is not recharge. It's actually draining. Somebody might need a vacation after that.
Absolutely. Listen, I have raised 8 children, so I know exactly what you're talking about. It's exhausting.
And so you put that right up there. But the beauty, what one of the things that really stuck out for me is where you said, what was it like to work with you? And you say right at the beginning, I liked you right away. And I hadn't even met you when I read this because you said, I'm going to read it. I'd like to think that I'm the best supervisor manager out there, but that's not true. You will likely have worked or will work with someone better than me. I am a hands-off manager who likes to connect with their staff at least once a week so we can share what we're working on. I am a stickler for details and appreciate a heads up when things will be turned in late. I am huge on relationship building and will work to ensure you and I can work together well. I value work-life balance and do not expect you to work past your identified working hours. I am focused on you getting your work done and less on the number of hours you put into your work. Quality over quantity is important. I want to work with someone who can push back. I was going to stop reading it, but it's just so good. Offer critical and diverse perspectives and values challenging conversations. We can agree to disagree, but need to represent a joint front for the organization. I am happy to provide references of individuals I've worked with in the past. How did that work for you?
We're in the middle of hiring someone. We have two finalists, and I've offered to both of them that they can talk to somebody, and neither one of them wants to take up on it. They say, this process has been so transparent, so open. You've given everything you know and you can share. We're not quite sure what we're going to ask. And I've reached out to people who worked for me in the past or who I've worked with as peers. Even people on the front of collaborative have said, well, we want to talk to her and tell her, what you're like. And I'm like, sure, yeah, I want you to do it. I don't have a problem. Like, it's only fair that if I'm doing a reference check on someone, that they get to do it on me, right? Like, we're a small team. This is just going to be me and this person. It doesn't help bringing somebody in that does not know how I work, that does not like me, that goes like, this is, we're not compatible. And I've been telling this to people. I was like, this is a marriage, whether you like it or not. And not one that you can very easily leave, unfortunately. I mean, you can. It's not that you can't, but it also brings trauma with it, just like any other relationship does. So if I can make sure that you and I are the best match for each other, and you have the option to making sure that you and I are the best match for each other, then why are we not going to do that? It's just so simple. And it's something I've all, again, this job description is a lot of what I've always wanted, right? Like, I would want to know what it's like working with my manager. And I don't think 10 minutes of talking to someone at the end of an hour-long interview tells you what that person is like.
The beautiful thing about that, Surabhi, is that when you approach any relationship with such an open heart and transparency, it sets a tone going forward and it is so much easier. You acknowledge that there's going to be conflict and that you can have healthy conflict with each other, and united, you will go forward publicly. I mean, that's also the fact that you're open to dissenting points of view and to be challenged so that you can both rise together, sets a beautiful tone. I wanted this job, and I don't even want a job. And I didn't apply for the job, FYI. But I stopped and I read it and I went, do I want a real job again? Like it's so bad. I'm sure a lot of people did. What was the response like?
Oh, insane in some ways. Again, not what I was expecting. I had a lot of people like you reach out and say, I'm not even looking for a job, but I want to apply. And I had to tell all of them, like, no, you're not a good fit. You're not going to apply. You're not the person I'm looking for. I would say those were at least, 10 to 15 conversations I had. People I know, people I don't know, like I didn't know you. But a lot of people in my network who said, heck, I'm not looking for a job, Derby. or I'm an ED, but I want to come work for you. And I'm like, no, you don't want to come work for me. We can work together, but you don't have to work for me. You know, there's a difference in how we can make that happen. So we had a bunch of people that didn't follow instructions, that applied through LinkedIn, because it was posted on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And they did LinkedIn Easy Apply or sent me emails with their resumes on LinkedIn, through LinkedIn messaging. And so those were obviously not entertained, but we had solid 61 applications that followed my instructions and sent me an email on an email address. We
Sorry,
narrowed that.
Can you say that again? How many? 51?
61.
61.
Yes.
Okay, so and we should clarify that you specifically said, do not send your resume at this point. Answer the following questions.
That is correct.
And that is very specific. Why do you want the job? How does your background experience align? Two things that excite you. That must have been fun to read. What skills do you hope to gain? And what's an outstanding question you have that we did not answer? So you had to go through 61 three-page letters.
I did.
Tell me a little bit about that.
I will say this, Kimberly. I will never, ever, ever hire somebody based on a resume only. I will always follow this process that I created of asking 5 questions. These questions may change and may evolve, and you may get 2 pages versus 3 pages, but I'm never, ever going to hire somebody based on just a resume.
Tell me why.
For many reasons, the resume does not give you a full picture of why this person is interested in a job. And a lot of people will submit a very generic cover letter, which also doesn't help.
Mm-hmm.
By asking these 5 questions, I knew very well and very quickly whether they knew workforce development, whether they read the job description and they connected their answers to the job description. I had zero bias that a resume offered 100% of the time. I had no idea what this person looked like. I had no idea what this person's background was. I had no idea where they were based in Canada. Or abroad. We had a lot of applications also from people not in Canada, outside of Canada. I just learned about their critical thinking very quickly. I learned about their writing skills. I learned if they can follow instructions. These are all just soft skills. I would say a lot of hidden skills that are very difficult to uncover unless and until you hire the person and they're on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And all things that a resume does not tell. Right? Like there was a reason I put 2 p.m. EST, not end of the day, because I want to see, are you going to submit it by 2 o'clock or mm-hmm. are you going to submit it at 2:10?
Mm-hmm. Because you said earlier, deadlines are important to you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to see what comes through.
Mm-hmm.
I also, you know, there was a question that is, what are 2 things that don't excite you about this job? I was really interested in knowing, what are those 2 things? You know, also, what is a question that I did not answer in this job description that you'd like to know?
Mm-hmm.
And you can't imagine the number of people that asked me, what is the best way for me to use my vacation time? Or how soon can I use my vacation time when I start the job? And they could have answered the first 4 questions absolutely brilliantly. But that question alone took them out of the run.
Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's not because I don't care about how soon they use it. But if all of this, that's the only thing you got, mm-hmm. then you and I cannot work together from a critical thinking perspective.
I'm interested in the flip side, and I don't know. I know that you are still working. By the time this podcast is published, you will have hired someone. So can you tell us more about the answer to that question that did get you shortlisted?
I think there were thoughtful questions. Some people asked, how do you place equity in your work? You have talked a little bit about it, but I'd like to know more. Some people ask, what is the role of technology or artificial intelligence in workforce development, and how are you adapting that via grant making? There were obviously questions about what does growth in this role look like? What do you expect me to do in the first 30 days? What are you hoping a full year would look like? What does success look like in this position? I think something that showed personal development, something that showed your eagerness to sort of learn more about the position, the job, is what I was looking for. I wasn't looking for something that somebody that said, how do I use vacation, or how do I use my sick time, or there were a few people who just said the job description was complete, so I have no questions for you. That
That's
also
not
didn't
good
happen.
enough either. No.
No.
Yeah. So then, how does this job posting lead into the interview process? What did the process look like for you?
Very good question. So remember I said we had 61 people apply and I shortlisted to 14, which was still a lot, because I offered everybody an hour-long interview and we were only doing two rounds of interview. So we had members of the Funder Collaborative join for some of the interviews and not for others. We did hour-long interviews where the candidate had full 30 minutes to ask us questions, and I had 30 minutes to ask them questions. The interviews were structured as conversations where we went back and forth in terms of, what we wanted to learn from each other. Let's be honest, this is a job in philanthropy. There are no technical skills that I need to know about. I'm not going to try and quiz you on whether you can create an Excel sheet or not, whether you can manage this grant database or software or not. It doesn't help because I can't do all of those things. So I'm not going to quiz you on a skill I don't have. Let's start there. So I sent all the candidates before the interview a list of topics that we would be talking about, not necessarily questions, but just themes that I hope to explore together. And those three themes were around, systems change and your experience with systems change. Or what are some challenges you've seen with relationship building? What energizes you about stakeholder engagement? Or what drains you equally? And just, learning more about them, just who they are as a person, how they got into this field, what interests them, what frustrates them. The very basic sort of, again, four questions. And we just really only had a half hour to get into these four questions. And then I would turn it over to the candidate to say, you have your 30 minutes now. And again, this is intentional. As you know, most interview processes only give you 10 or 15 minutes at the end. And for me, it was very important that if I'm asking 30 minutes of their time and they get 30 minutes of my time, that there has to be equity there. It's not equality, it's really about equity in terms of who they are, what their relationship is with me. And there's always a power dynamic, interviewer and interviewee. And I was trying really hard to get rid of that. So they knew they had equal power. And some candidates made use of their 30 minutes, and we went past 30 minutes. And some of them didn't make use of them, and they only used 5 or 10 minutes of it. So I had some conversations that were a full hour, maybe a little over, and some that were 30-minute conversations. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's just from my perspective, it needed to be a fair, equitable hiring process.
You can't fake your way through that.
No, you can't.
You will get a very good sense of rapport and connection through a real conversation like that, instead of walk me through your resume.
Yeah, no. Funny enough, I only looked at the resume 5 minutes before I was talking to someone. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not the kind of an interviewer that says, okay, well, in 2016, you did this. Mm-hmm. And in 2020, you did this. Help me make the connection. I'm not that kind of a person. Mm-hmm. For me, it's about, okay, just tell me, what has stakeholder engagement meant for you?
Mm-hmm.
How is it hard? How is it easy? Why is it important? Let's talk about that versus what you did in your job in 2015.
I guess my hope by amplifying this work of yours is, to the extent that I can, is that maybe some other folks, other organizations might follow your lead here. Do you see any evidence of this spreading?
So I don't in the immediate future. And I say that because for it to be able to spread, you fundamentally as an organization need to move in a direction of equity.
Mm-hmm.
You have to live, breathe, eat, drink equity. It has to be part of your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to make it part of your DNA. I wasn't born this way. I wasn't this way 5 years ago. I've had to work really hard to really understand what it is and make it front and center in my life, in my work, in everything I do. And to be able to do that and to be able to shift those systems, you have to start from within. And for the nonprofit sector, that comes from a very scarcity mindset.
Mm-hmm.
To move towards a mindset focused on abundance and focused on non-competition and focused on transparency and focused on security. And security, I mean security of self, of thoughts, of confidence, not insecurity in all of these areas, requires work. And I don't think we're ready to do it just because the sector does not allow. Those systems are not there.
I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. And I guess the part where I get stuck is, how do we create that shift? What will be the catalyst to help people stop talking about these things and start doing them?
I think it's a lot of fear.
Mm.
And let's be honest, I was scared how this was going to turn up. I had people tell me, I'm never going to answer these 5 questions. I'm just going to send my resume to you. And I wasn't sure if that was going to work. Till I didn't receive the first application, I didn't know if this was going to work. And at that point, I was like, at least one person.
No. Yeah, good. There's one person in the universe who wants to work with me.
Yeah. There's one person that wants to work with me. And you just don't know. You just don't know. And I'd be lying if I didn't say that I wasn't scared. I'm not scared now. I'm scared every step of the way because I'm having to push my boundary.
Mm.
I'm having to go out of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having to take risks. I'm having to make my insecurities public. I am having to put on a brave front and walk a path I've never walked before. I haven't done hiring like this before. This is the first time I'm doing it. But I've had such joy doing it at the same time. Mm-hmm. Every risk I've taken, when it's turned out the right decision, it gives me confidence to take that next step, to mm-hmm. take that next risky decision.
Mm-hmm.
Putting out there that I'm going to give you references, I didn't even talk to people before I put it out there. I was like, will I have 2 people that want to talk?
Mm-hmm.
What do they want to?
What will they say about me?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Or just putting how much of a deadline freak I am. Like, I didn't know how people were going to take that. All I mean, the whole section. I was like, are people going to think I'm self-absorbed? Is this even welcome in a job description? I've never seen it before. So all of these things were, you know, required deep introspection. And it required me to just hope and pray that this is going to work.
So you have just said so many things. Abundance mindset, moving out of comfort zone. What's coming up for me, though, among all of that is, how do you think you can create psychological safety so that people will feel able to take risks and move out of their comfort zone?
That's a good question. So in the past, I used to tell my staff that I am the safety net that's below you.
Mm-hmm.
When you take a decision, and I strongly believe in it, is when you take a decision, it's always the best decision at that time in that moment.
Right.
Because you're taking that decision based on the information that is available to you in the present, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hindsight is always 20/20.
Mm-hmm.
But what is important is if that decision doesn't turn out the way you had envisioned, if it doesn't go the way you wanted it to, that you learn from it. And when I say I'm the safety net, I mean you can only go so far with that decision. But the safety net is only a safety net if you learn from it and don't make that mistake again.
Right.
Maybe you didn't consider this. Maybe you didn't consider that. Maybe there was a blind spot. But just recognizing that is more than enough.
And that's the beautiful thing about missteps is someone who really is entrepreneurial, someone who is a builder, someone who likes to work in an agile environment will look at that misstep and go, huh, I learned so much from that. Okay,
yeah.
Let's do it this way now. Okay.
Exactly. 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 So that's why I think the psychological safety comes from encouraging others to take risks, but not penalizing them for that, not punishing them for that, not reflecting that in their performance review. Because I could have taken 1,000 wrong decisions. My staff will probably never know if I'm not making it public. Or if I spin it like that's how I always intended it to be, how will they know that's not how I intended it? So if I have the luxury of doing that, why don't they have that luxury? Right? I really, really, really want to get rid of this power imbalance. And I get that there's always going to be some power that I, as a boss, as a supervisor, as a manager, will hold. But can I give a lot of that to the other person too, where they can at least speak openly and share with me what's not working or what is working or where things need to change? Because if we don't create those spaces, how are they going to thrive? And how am I going to thrive? Remember I said it's a marriage? So if we want this relationship to work, both of us have to be happy. One of us being unhappy and the other being happy, that's never a good relationship. You don't want to go to work in those circumstances.
I remember a job that I had once, and the first 3 months were hell. It was a horrible fit, and I had to sit down, the executive director and I had to sit down and go, okay, we're not working together. Unless we fix what's happening here, this will not be a successful partnership.
Yeah.
And we did, and it worked. And it took, you know, I think back to that moment, it was really scary.
Yeah.
It's really scary to be that vulnerable with people that you work with.
It's very scary.
So I'm curious how big your organization is going to get, because I know everybody now wants to work with you.
So it's only going to be two people. I've been solo doloing it for a really long time, almost 4 years. And when this person comes in, I'm very excited. We'll have two of us. I really need to hire another person. We just don't have the money for it. As is also the case in the nonprofit philanthropy sector, where you need more money, but then you're stuck between, and you need more staff.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is always, do I give money out or do I hire staff? And I'm obviously stuck there. But I hope to grow the organization. I have plans. I have big vision for the Funder Collaborative. If it works out, then I'm looking at hiring many people in many parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, I'll still have at least my one perfect person.
You'll have one amazing relationship with one incredible coworker.
Exactly.
I want to ask you what abundance mindset means to you.
Abundance mindset means recognizing the other person has faults, recognizing they're not perfect, recognizing you are not perfect, giving yourself space, giving yourself time. I am so over this urgency culture of everything needed to be done yesterday and it was due 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's having patience. It's coming from a place of love. It's coming from a place of being human. It's coming from a place of wanting to do better, being transparent, being open, not hiding things, not talking behind somebody's back, not gossiping. It's just being. It's just showing up as who you are, and not putting a pretense, not putting a false face forward.
You know, you just described working and living in a state of resonance and fulfillment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk more of that, please.
Yeah. I mean, and I didn't even mention this. I think it's intentionality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why am I doing? What am I doing? Even if I'm bringing the urgency culture in,
mm-hmm.
what is my intent behind it? Mm-hmm. If I can't define that intent, then it's not needed.
Yeah.
It's really pausing.
Taking time to think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I love what you said about when you live with intention, you spend time on things that matter.
Yeah.
Right? Which is a lot more efficient too.
Yeah.
So if we were going to end this conversation now, what would be left unsaid?
I say people take risks, push your boundaries. It's going to make you uncomfortable. You're going to hate yourself. You're going to maybe have sleepless nights. But the other side, when you come out of that, you're just going to love it. You're going to be so satisfied. You're going to be so happy you did the right thing. And you'll have a clear conscience. You'll go into this just happier, and you're going to have a happier relationship with your colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important.
Yeah. And then you don't have to do fake team building exercises because you've you're building a team.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate those team building exercises, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Because I'm not having fun. I'm just so stressed out.
Yeah. But yeah. Imagine yeah. an organization where you say two words, staff retreat, and people get excited about it.
I know.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your experience and your wisdom with us today. I would love to see this spread.
Me too. And I'm happy to talk to anybody that after listening to this podcast wants to learn more about how I did it, what mm-hmm. my process was. Happy to share any emails I sent as templates and my thinking behind this. Happy to look at people's job descriptions and tell them how they can fix it. You know, I'd love for better job descriptions to be out there in the world.
Yeah.
Because if and when I'm ready to apply for a job, I'd want to see a good one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very generous. Thank you for your generosity and your kindness and your authenticity. I've loved talking to you.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me, Kimberly.
Serby, thank you so much for joining us in conversation. I could talk to you all day long. And folks, do get in touch with Serby if you'd like to take her up on taking a quick peek at your job posting. That is a very generous offer. And thank you for making this conversation a priority in your day. Please remember to like, review, and share this podcast. Let's keep inviting more people into the circle. See you next time.